Here we are, Acts 27, and we got 31 and a half minutes. What's happening in Acts chapter 27? Well, Paul's going to be involved in a shipwreck, which is interesting because when you read 2 Corinthians chapter 11, when Paul lists a number of trials and difficulties that he had been through, he says in that chapter that three times he had been shipwrecked. Well, guess what? He wrote that before Acts chapter 27 happened. So guess what we're reading in Acts 27? Shipwreck number four that didn't even make the list in 2 Corinthians. What I want to do, I want you to get your Bibles and get over to get over to Acts chapter 27. And I want to try to set the scene here for us. And probably what's going to happen tonight is similar to what happened last night. We set the scene so long last night that we didn't have as long to actually make the application. But that's okay. We're going to do the best that we can. So Acts chapter 27. Is Paul a free man or a prisoner? Prisoner. All right, good. All right, so Paul is a prisoner. He's been a prisoner since he was arrested back in Acts chapter 21. All right, he was arrested in Acts 21. He's put in prison in Jerusalem. And then there was violence that was breaking out against Paul while he's a prisoner in Jerusalem. And so, remember, they transported him by night. So we got to protect him. We got to keep this a secret. So they transport him by night to Caesarea. All right. And he goes to Caesarea. He's in prison there for 2 years because the lousy governors weren't any good. They wouldn't be honest men about all of this. He couldn't get a fair trial there. And so he appeals to Caesar. All right. So he says, fine, I'm not getting a fair trial here. I appeal to Caesar. Who's Caesar? That Roman emperor. All right. He appeals to Caesar. And so to Caesar, he's going to go. And so what we're reading here in Acts 27 is the process by which Paul is making his way to Caesar. Okay. Paul had originally had plans to go to Rome as a preacher, but now he's going as a prisoner instead. But isn't he still a preacher? Yes. Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's a prisoner. That's not going to stop him. He's still going to preach. When I read Acts 27, I can't help but think of Dan Jenkins. I think this is one of his favorite stories in all the Bible. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I've probably heard Dan preach 37 sermons on maybe 38, I don't know, on Acts chapter 27. But, all right, so here we go. Are you there? Did I give you enough time to get Acts 27? When it was decided that we should sail to Italy, oh, wouldn't that be nice about this time of year, you know, just to take a Mediterranean cruise and stop by Italy. Is that what's going on here? Yeah, not a Mediterranean cruise. He doesn't have that buffet that you have on the cruise line. So we're going to sail to Italy as prisoners. They delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius. He's a centurion. He's a centurion of a regiment, or your Bible might have the word cohort, C-O-H-O-R-T. What is that? Somebody who's in charge of 600 soldiers, all right? So this isn't some, or a regiment is 600 soldiers. Julius is in charge of 100 of them, all right? So this is a pretty important guy. Verse 2, so entering a ship, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. So as we're going to see here, as we get into this, this was not a good time of year to be out on the water, okay? And so their idea was, we're going to stick close to shore because, hey, that'll keep us kind of safe. Not so much, though. So he says at the end of verse 2 that Aristarchus was with us. This is one of Paul's regular companions who had been with him even from the days back in his third missionary journey. So verse 3, the next day we landed in Sidon. And this centurion, how did he treat Paul in verse 3? Was he mean? This is a Roman soldier in charge of 100 men. How did he treat him? Kindly. It's interesting to read through the life of Paul. Guess how most of the Roman military leaders treated him? Fairly. It's the rest of the folks that are horrible towards him. But here's this guy who treats him kindly, and he gave him liberty to go to his friends and to receive care. You think Paul needed medical care? You think he needed attention? So here, go let your friends take care of you. Verse 4, we put to sea from there. We sailed under the shelter of the island of Cyprus. Why? Why did they do that?
Because the winds were rough.
The winds were what?
Contrary.
That sounds like good sailing weather, right? We're out here and everything's contrary to us. As we go through this, I want you to think to yourself, forget about you being out on a boat. You can be on a boat if you want to, but I'm talking about just the boat and the sea of life. Do you ever feel like on the sea of life that things are contrary? Things are pushing back against you. Sometimes it feels like the wind is at your back and wow, everything's going well. And then all of a sudden the wind shifts directions. I'm not talking literally. You know what I'm talking about. You ever feel like that in life? All of a sudden the wind has shifted directions and now it's contrary. Well, that's what's literally happening here. Verse 5. When we had sailed over the sea, we came to Myra. So they're sailing around Cyprus, okay? They're sailing on the north side of Cyprus trying to keep out of the wind, although it's not working. And so there in Cyprus, in verse 6, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship that was sailing to Italy. And so he put us on board there. So where is Alexandria? What continent? It's in the country of Egypt down in Africa. All right, so think about where they are. They're on the northern part of the Mediterranean Sea. They have found a ship from Alexandria down in the southern part of the sea. And these Alexandrian ships would often carry grain or carry wheat from Egypt to go up to Rome. So that's the ship that they find. It's got to be a pretty big ship because it's going to take 276 of these passengers. We're going to see that number later as we get into this. So it must be a pretty good sized ship. Verse 7, how quickly are they sailing?
Slowly.
Sailed slowly for many days. Well, that's because in that region, normally, the current wasn't very strong to begin with. They arrived with what? Does your Bible have the word difficulty? This doesn't sound like it's a good trip, doesn't it? I mean, would you be asking for your money back if you're on this kind of a trip? You know, can I get a refund? This isn't all that fun. So they sailed slowly, arrived with difficulty, the wind not permitting us to proceed. This doesn't sound good. So we sailed, first they sailed under the shelter of Cyprus. Now they're going to sail under a smaller island by the name of Crete, but it's got tall mountains. And so verse 8, they passed by it, and it's going to take them a while to get past Crete, but they passed it, verse 8, with what? Difficulty. This is a struggle. Verse 9, when much time had been spent, and sailing was now what? Dangerous. Why is sailing now dangerous? Well, it says because the fast was already over. Now, what's that talking about? This is the one time we read about the Day of Atonement in the New Testament. Under the Old Testament law, there was only one time that God commanded the Jews to ever fast.
7 months, right?
On the Day of Atonement, yes. And so this is just a time marker for us. It's a time marker that the Day of Atonement fell at the end of September or the beginning of October, depending on the year. So it's an interesting time marker because when you go back and study the nautical history during that time period, from the middle of September to the middle of November was a dangerous time to sail. So it was kind of treacherous. They wouldn't go out very much. Well, where's the Day of Atonement? Smack in the middle of that. So that's why the Bible, it's interesting to read Acts 27, how precise Luke is in recording. How did he know all this? You'll meet people that will say, no, you know, that Luke didn't know anything about this. He's just making this stuff up. No. You read not just Acts 27, but the whole book, but you read about the precision here. What was Luke, what was his profession? Was he a sailor? He's a pirate, right? What was he? He's a physician. What does he know about sailing? The precision, not just of the locations, but the terminology. He uses sailing nautical terminology here. How does he know all of this? Is he just guessing? Or is he under inspiration? We don't have time to talk about Sir William Ramsay, but sometime go and research Sir William Ramsay and research about this man who read through the book of Acts, a skeptic who read through the book of Acts and said, no. This guy who's writing this, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And so this guy goes back in the 1800s. He makes his way over to the Bible lands with a copy of the book of Acts, and he didn't really have it, but in my brain, and a Sharpie. He had a copy of the book of Acts and a Sharpie. It wasn't a Sharpie, but here's the point. He was going there to prove that the book of Acts was full of errors, and he was just going to mark it up and say, look, you can't trust the Bible. Look at all these errors. And guess what he found when he got over to the Bible lands and his copy of the book of Acts? The book of Acts is right and accurate in every single detail. So guess what we now have? Guess who wrote some of the best histories of this land and even one of the most comprehensive histories of the life of Paul? A guy by the name of Sir William Ramsay. Skeptic, didn't believe it, but actually read it, studied it, saw it for himself and said, nope, it's right. That's what's happening here, Acts 27. The precision here of what's being said is overwhelming. So anyway, back to the point. Dangerous time for sailing. Middle of September, middle of November, right here in the middle of it. But you get beyond that and you go to March and they didn't sail at all. So these guys are determined. We're going to make it to Rome. Even through all this danger. So what did Paul tell them in verse 10? I told you we weren't going to get to the lesson tonight, didn't I? We're just going to read the chapter. Verse 10. Paul says, men, I perceive that this voyage will end. How's it going to end? Are we going to go to a private island and have a feast and a buffet? No, we're going to end with disaster and much loss. This is what Paul thinks is going to happen. This isn't what God says yet. Not only are the cargo and the ship, but we're going to lose lives too. But did they listen to him? No way. No, they're going to listen to the majority instead because that's always the right thing to do, right? Just follow popular opinion and that's always a good decision, right? Wrong. Verse 12. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, it's almost like every verse you read, something's going wrong, right? Every time you turn around, something bad. So this isn't a place to winter. So the majority, that's who he's following here, advised to set sail from there also, hoping that they could reach Phoenix, which is on the very western side of the island of Crete, and to harbor there. That's what they were hoping to do. So verse 13, the south wind blew softly, and they thought, oh, this is a sign from God. The south wind blew softly, and they supposed that they had obtained their desire. Great, we can go. So they put out to sea, and they sailed close to Crete. Remember, a mountainous island, if we stay close to it, we're protected from the wind. What's the first word you have in verse 14? But. That's not always a good word, right? Boy, this is going to work out great. We're going to get there, but. No, it's not going to work out great. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose, and they even had a name for it. What kind of people name their storms? Oh. What started on Monday? What season? Our naming storm season started. So they have a name even for this storm. And the Greek term here for tempestuous is actually a word we would have typhoon from. So, I mean, this is a major storm. Verse 15. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. Or does somebody have something different than we let her drive? We were driven. That's not a good sign. Again, we're at the mercy of wherever the wind's going to take us. Verse 16. And running under the shelter of a smaller island that was just on the south side of Crete, we secured the skiff with what at the end of verse 16? What's the last word? Difficulties. That's the third time we've seen the word difficulty reading through this. This isn't a good thing. This isn't a good thing. Verse 17. So they took the skiff on board, secured it down. They used cables to undergird the ship. Let me ask you a question. If you're a passenger on a ship and they get cables out and they wrap them under the hull of the ship and up over the top of the ship and they get the ratchets, they're tightening and you're on this ship. What are you thinking? This is not, they're trying to hold the boat together. Mm-hmm. If you weren't a praying person before this, I'm just asking. If you weren't a praying person before this, what are you thinking? So they ratchet this ship back together with cables. And where are we? End of verse 17. Fearing lest they should run aground. Is that a good thing to do in a ship? Run aground. Boats are supposed to be in what?
Water.
Yeah, not the ground, the water. But they're fearing they're going to run aground. So they struck sail, and again, the end of this verse, they were driven. The wind's just driving them. They can't control it. Verse 18. We were exceedingly tempest-tossed. Have you all been out on the ocean? Have you been tempest-tossed? You ever been there? Did you ever turn green? You're like, why am I out here? But here's the deal. You knew at the end of the day, the captain's going to bring you back in because that's what he's paid to do. They're exceedingly tempest-tossed. And the next day, that was just that day. The next day, they lightened the ship. Who did? They did. They'd lighten the ship in verse 18. Verse 19, on the third day, we threw the tackle overboard with our own hands. We're getting involved. We're trying to lighten the load here. Verse 20. We neither saw this, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days. Is that a big deal?
Yes.
You just pull out your GPS, right? I mean, you just pull out your GPS. Where are we? Oh, recenter. Oh, okay, that's where we are. Why do you need the stars? You got to know, where are we? They did. So the point is, they had no idea where they were. And the middle of verse 20, no small tempest beat on us. If it was no small one, what does that mean? They're all big ones. How much hope was lost? Was there any hope left? All hope that we would be saved was finally given up. Wow. Okay. You got the picture here? They're not eating. You get that in verse 21. There's been a long abstinence from food. Drop down for just a second. We're going to come back to these verses in just a minute. Drop down to verse 26. Paul told them that we must run aground. That's not what you want to do, but that's what's going to happen. Paul says we must run aground on a certain island. Verse 27. The 14th night came. Can you imagine? 2 weeks. How long was Gilligan? 3-hour tour? All right. This is 2 weeks. We were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea. About midnight, the sailors sensed that, it's interesting, the Bible tells us what time. They sensed that they were drawing near some land. That's a good thing, right? Not when you can't see. If you can't see, if you can't see up and you can't see down, you have no idea what's out there. So they're drawing near some land. They took soundings, verse 28. We're taking too long for this. This is just fun for me. They took soundings. They're dropping a line in the ground. They don't have sonar. Come on. Their sonar is a line with a weight on the end of it. Well, lead weight on the end of it, and they drop the line out, and then they measure, all right, how long was that line? Oh, no. And so what they're finding out is we're getting closer and closer to land. So verse 29, lest we run aground on the rocks, bad thing, they dropped 4 anchors from the back of the ship to try to slow it and to try to stabilize it. And the end of verse 29 says they prayed for what? They prayed for day to come. Have you been there? Get out of this physical storm, get into your storm of life. Have you ever begged God, just get me through this? God, please help me to see the other side. Was day going to come any quicker for them because they were praying for it? I mean, the sun was still going to come up at the same time it was scheduled to come up, wasn't it? But you've been in a storm where you're just begging, Lord, please get me through this. Verse 30, some of the soldiers tried to escape, and so they were deceitful. Oh, well, we're going to put the anchors out. No, you're trying to get in the skiff and you're trying to leave. You sorry so-and-sos. And so they said, nope, we're cutting the skiff. Let it go. You stay here in the ship. Drop down for just a second. Down to verse 39. They're coming upon a bay. They plan to run the ship, onto which they plan to run the ship if they could. Verse 40. They let go of the anchors. They loosed the rudder ropes. They hoisted the mainsail, and they made for shore. Their plan was, we're just running this baby on the ground. Verse 41, striking a place where two seas met. Have you all checked out the inlet recently? Have you watched the boats trying to come in and out of the inlet? You got to be skilled to do that. Here's the place where two seas met. And they ran the ship aground. Okay, that's what they planned to do. But now the front, the prow of the ship is stuck fast. And the stern of the ship, remember, this has got to be a big boat. This isn't like Mike's boat. It's bigger than Mike's boat. Mike, can you fit 276 people in your boat? Not even close. I mean, this is a huge boat. But they got the front of it stuck. But the stern is back there being broken up in the waves. And so verse 42, the soldiers have a great idea. What's their great idea in verse 42? Kill everybody. I mean, that's natural, right? Kill everybody. Well, why are we going to kill everybody? Well, because if you're a soldier in charge of prisoners and something happens to those prisoners, what's going to happen to you? You're dead. Let's kill them. We'll take care of it. So their plan is to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim and escape. Verse 43, but who steps in? The centurion, Paul's friend. It doesn't say his friend. But the guy who looked out for him at the beginning of the chapter is now looking out for him at the end of the chapter. What does verse 43 say? Wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded them that everybody should swim or take one of the boards of the ship, get to land. The end of the chapter says, so it was that they all escaped safely to land. So here's the point. We've got 10 minutes to make the point. I know this is a physical storm that we're reading about. Did Paul deserve to be in that physical storm? No. I mean, we read about what's I mean, he's a preacher of the gospel. God, why aren't you protecting him, God? What's the deal? Did God let him go through this storm? Did you hear how I asked the question? Did God let him go through this storm? Did Paul come out the other side of the storm? He did, but how did he get to the other side of the storm? Oh, he had to go through the storm. Did God stop the storm? Did he stop it after day one? Day two, day three. It took a while to get through the storm, didn't it? Well, God, where are you? Why are you letting this happen, God? Where are you? He's right there. So let me walk through a few points with you real quick. And then we'll have to stop wherever we get. Everything starts with C, because our theme for our VBS this year is sailing with Paul on the high seas. So if you haven't been here, you see that we've talked about converted and C for commissioned. We talked last night about C for confined. Tonight, C for courageous. And all of our lessons have just been full of seas. All right. So Paul's in the middle of this storm. He's dealing with. And so I want you to don't just think about Paul. I want you to think about you. Paul consigned himself to the fact that I'm not in charge. I'm not in control. Was Paul in control? Anything but. Who was in control? And Paul was okay with that. Paul let God be in control and not Paul. We read the word difficulty three times. We read the word fear or afraid three times. We read the word winds or tempest nine times. This isn't looking good. That's okay. Doesn't matter how it looks. God's in control. Even if I can't, you mean God's in control even if I can't see it? Yeah, that's the whole point. God's on his throne. And we don't have time to dig into it, but I love Psalm 89, if I can say it right. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. What does that mean? God's always going to do right, and he's always going to do what's fair. That's the foundation of who he is. Do you trust him? Do you trust that whatever the storm is, God's going to do what's right, God's going to do what's fair, he's going to get you through it? What if getting you through that storm means that you die? Would Paul have been okay with that? I mean, if the storm took Paul's life, would he have been like, God, what's the deal? No, he would have been like, cool. For me to live is Christ, to die is, hey, looky here. So even if getting through it means I die, And that's where Romans 8 and 28 comes in. When I am courageous, then I know that God is going to work. How many things? What does the Bible say? That God's going to work all things together for good. For good as defined by who? Not me. My definition of good may not be God's definition. Well, whose definition do you trust? My definition wavers from day to day. Does your definition waver? Well, maybe good would be this today. Maybe good would be this tomorrow. God's definition for good, steady. Do I trust Him? If I'm courageous like Paul in the middle of this storm, I'm going to trust whatever happens here, it's going to be okay. Number two, Paul's in the middle of this storm, and of all things, here's a man who's content with where he is. Everybody else is not, but Paul seems to be the one who it's not that he's not afraid. Look in verse 24. Back up to verse 23. There, Paul says, "There stood by me this night." Can you imagine hearing this? There stood by me this night an angel of the God, not just an angel of God, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve. And what did the angel say in verse 24? Do not be afraid. Interesting. You don't have to know this, but I find it interesting. The Greek structure, the verb, is saying stop being afraid. Was Paul afraid in the middle of this storm?
No.
He's human. Would you be afraid in the middle of this storm?
Yes.
But God says, Paul, stop being afraid. Why? Because you must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted all those who are with, all those who sail with you. Paul appealed to Caesar. God told him in Acts 23, you're going to Rome. And here God appears to him again and says, did you not believe me in chapter 23? I told you you're going to Rome. You're still going to Rome. So here's a man who's content. I remember what he says in Philippians chapter 4, that he learned to be content. What does that mean? Sometimes it's a learning process. And so after 14 days, when they had nothing to eat, look at verse 33. Day was about to dawn. Remember what they prayed for? They prayed for day to come. Here's the answer to their prayer. Day was coming. Day was about to dawn, verse 33. Paul begged them over and over, implored them to do what? To eat. Today is the 14th day. Have you ever gone 14 days without eating? And it wasn't because you were in a hospital bed and you just had surgery? Now, if you were out in this boat, remember I asked you if you ever been offshore and you turned green, did you eat out there? You better not, because never mind, we won't go there. But where are we? Verse 33. Today's the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food. You've eaten nothing. Verse 34. Therefore, I'm begging you, I urge you, take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you. That's pretty nice. Mike, that's a pretty nice thing to say. I mean, wouldn't that be? Not a hair is going to fall from any of you. Verse 35. And when he had said these things, Paul took bread. How old is that bread?
2 weeks old, at least.
At least 2 weeks old. He took bread and he did what? He gave thanks to God privately, in the presence of them all. Here's a man, middle of a storm, that's okay. My God's protecting me, and still in the middle of this storm, God deserves my thanks for what He has given me. Sometimes we shake our fist. We want to shake our fist at God. Why is all of this happening to me? And here's somebody who could have done it, but instead of shaking his fist, he raises his hand with that bread and says, God, thank you for what you've given me. What does that take? It takes courage. It takes courage to not look at circumstances and look at a heart of fear, but to look at the God who is in control of it. Who's Paul concerned about in this situation? Not himself.
Everybody.
He's concerned about everybody else except for himself. Isn't that interesting? He looks at these other men and he says, you all need to eat. Well, who cares about them, Paul? He does. And look at when they're trying to get off the ship. Look at verse 31. Remember the guys who were trying to pretend they were letting anchors down, but they're trying to get in the skiff instead to get off the ship. What does Paul say in verse 31? Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. Well, who cares? Let them go. We're trying to lighten the ship. If we can get rid of a couple hundred guys, that's pretty good. No. He's concerned about them. What kind of person is more concerned about others than he is himself? You ever heard about a man named Jesus? Was he ever more concerned about others than he was about himself? Yeah. So Philippians 2 says, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Was that Paul here? In lowliness of mind, esteem others, even other prisoners, even soldiers who have been beating you, better than yourself. Is that hard to do? It's hard to do. It takes courage to not be selfish, but to say, what is it that I can do to help somebody else? We're not going to have time to finish these tonight. I just want you, this is my favorite part of the whole chapter, so let me put this up here, and then we're going to close. I love what Paul says to these guys. Look in verse 20. They thought all hope was going to be lost. They'd just given up that they were going to be saved. And so Paul stands up. He says in verse 21, middle of the verse, you should have listened to me. But they didn't. This isn't an I told you so moment. This is for him to say, this is for him to tell them what God said. Verse 22, I urge you to what? Take heart. He's trying to encourage these guys, build them up. For there will be no loss of life among you. The only thing that's going to be lost is the ship. Verse 23, for there stood by me this night an angel of the God to whom I belong. Here's the deal. Even when we're going through hard times, who do we belong to? We got to remember, I still belong to God. And I don't just belong to Him, he says at the end of verse 23. I serve Him. It's a present tense verb. He's not using past tense. I used to serve Him. He's saying right now here on this ship, I'm still serving Him. I hear the bell. Whom I belong, whom I serve. And then you get down to verse 25. Therefore, take heart. We're going to finish right here. Therefore, take heart, men. Look at what he says. Does he say, because I believe in God, I believe God exists, I believe there is a God? That's not what he says. He says, I want you to take heart. Why? Because I believe God that it is going to be just as he told me. Paul, it's not looking, have you opened your eyes in the last 2 weeks, Paul? It's not looking good. What's the deal? Paul, We're going to be wrecked. We're going to lose our lives. And Paul says, I don't care what you see. I care what my God told me. And I believe it's going to be exactly the way He's... You may not see it, but the Bible says we walk by faith and not by... Boy, that's hard when things are going bad for us. All we can do is walk by sight. But that's when we need to walk by faith and say, God, this may not be exactly the way I think it ought to be, but that's okay. Most important thing, we said it in the prayer tonight, the most important thing is I'm a child of God. I belong to Him, I'm serving Him, and I believe in Him, and He's going to take care of me no matter what comes.
That's a good thing.
Real quick, John.
I think Paul would tell me, stay with the church. Stay in the church.
Stay in the church, absolutely.
The 276 got saved, but you got to stay in the church.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you all for being here. There's a lot more I would have loved to have gotten to.